Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
All right. Well, good evening. I am so excited to have you with us tonight, and I'm just telling you what, I'm just looking out over the landscape and the sky line of the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas, and we had absolutely the most awesome day I have ever experienced in December in my life. It was just an absolute perfect beautiful weather day, and just had a glorious day. I hope you all are having a great day too, as we just kind of enter into the busy time of the year of Christmas, and we hope that you keep your mind focused on what this season's all about. We just want to welcome you to Breaking the Silence, and we're going to have a great time tonight. I have a couple guests tonight that it's just really an honor to be able to get to talk to them, let alone get to be able to spend an hour with them and dig inside of their wonderful brains and how they're changing the world. We want to let you know about a couple things. We had a wonderful time last week. I believe it was Tuesday night with Hope for the Holidays, and it was just a great program, and it had wonderful response around the world, and we have posted that on YouTube, and it's also on our webpage. It's also on the BBS Radio Network page under Breaking the Silence. You can actually go on there and watch it. You can actually go on there and just listen to it. Also, we want to let you know that you can get on Shattered by the Darkness, the website, shatteredbythedarkness.com. Get on there, join the network, like it and share it. We're going to give away a few more books in a few more weeks, so if you want to continue to do that. And then get on Instagram at the same thing, at Shattered by the Darkness, and join and like and share and all those things that you do on the social media. And if you would like to have a PDF of some of the things that we talked about on the program for Hope for the Holidays, and then some of the many pages that I was planning on getting to but never got around to, I am working on a PDF, and hopefully I'll finish that up this week. Drop me a line. Give me a call. My email, my phone number, and everything's right online on shatteredbythedarkness.com. You can let me know that you'd like to have that PDF when I finish that up, and I'll be glad to send that off to you. If you want to join in tonight, you're going to want to listen to this tonight. We're going to be talking about resiliency this evening, so it's going to be a great program. 888-627-6008, and we're going to have a great time tonight. As we did the video the other night, we're going to try to do that about once a month. So we're going to come up, Curtis, my son, and I are going to sit down and talk about some topics and some ideas where we can share. We're going to try to just do a video live from my home once a month. And we'll come up with a creative name and a creative network, and we're just going to kind of send that out. Just let you know we're working on that. So give me your thoughts, your comments. I would love to hear from you, and maybe some ideas that you have. Say, hey, what do you know about this? How can you help us on this? And because of that video program the other night, I have been talking to people. I talked to somebody the other night from Toronto. They called, and I talked a little bit, and from Chicago, and from Phoenix, and from Tampa, from Michigan, from Wisconsin, from Virginia, just all around the country and outside the country. And I just love sharing and discussing how to get through what a lot of people indicate are the most wonderful time of the year. But for some of us, it brings back some memories and some hard times too. So feel free to drop me a line, and we're going to be talking to you more about that. As we go into the program tonight, I am honored to have Elaine Miller Karras, and she is the executive director and co-founder. You know, if I read this whole biography, a little bio on her, the hour will be over because she has so much knowledge and is involved in so many things. But just to do a real nutshell, and then we'll bring her on and she can tell us about what she's doing. But she is the executive director and co-founder of the Trauma Resource Institute and author of the book, Building Resiliency to Trauma, the Trauma and Community Resiliency Models. And she has worked literally internationally to bring healing to the world's community. Her models, this model that we're going to talk about tonight, to date, has been brought to over 100 different countries in Asia, Africa, North America, the Middle East, South America, and Europe. And she's recognized, she's a recognized international speaker and author, and has presented the community resiliency model at so many different things, and even the United Nations. And her book has recently been selected by the United Nations, curated on the online library. The online library is one of the innovations that can help meet the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Woo, doggies, what does that even all mean? Elaine, are you there tonight?
I think I'm tired now.
I got to take a nap. I need a drink of a soda or something.
I think. Doggies. Goodness gracious. Well,
wow, first and, of all, you know, and you so I didn't much. Even get through half of it, Elaine. Welcome to
please.
The program.
I mean, I think we're going to have to cut that bio down. I mean, I have to say.
Well,
but you
wonderful.
Got my name right. That was very good. You did the right pronunciation.
Wonderful. I'm getting better at this. Fantastic. Well, I'm glad. Is Kelly with us tonight yet? I don't believe she is, but when she comes in, we'll have her join us here just shortly when she comes in from California. Now, Elaine, where are you based out of right now?
I'm in Claremont, California. So I'm in Southern California.
You're in Southern California. Okay, awesome. I'm going to be out in California, I think, 4 to 5 times next year. So
we're going to have to meet up so I can meet you in person. That might be fun.
That'll be great. Now, you know, I have to be honest with you. When I started to get involved in the ACEs and ACEs Connection and acesconnection.com, I always try to promote that. It's a wonderful organization, and you can get on there and join and just get in there and dig and research and all that. They started discussing a word and called resiliency. Outside of that world, for instance, if I'm on the street and I talk about resiliency, not many people know what we're even talking about. So I would kind of like to just start off, what is this community resiliency model that you've developed, and what's it all about, and how is it helping people deal with all the traumatic experiences in their lives? Fill us in and get us up to date. What's
okay,
going on?
Okay, I'll do the best I can. I think that's
sure
a great way to start, because when I first started talking about resiliency about 20 years ago, it wasn't the buzzword that it happens to be now. And so if you put resiliency into Google, you'll find that you'll come up with like 3,000 different definitions. But I'll tell you what mine is, and that is an individual's and community's ability to identify and use our individual and collective strengths and living fully in the present moment and to thrive while managing the activities of daily living. And some of us know that sometimes it's just not so easy, because lots of things happen to us that can knock us off the track. But I think what I've seen as I've gone all over the world is that when people are facing the worst of times, and I was just doing a training over the weekend, and I had people there from many different countries, and I said, you know, almost every country I go to, they'll tell me, you know, Elaine, we're the happiest country in the world. And I've heard that from the Philippines, from Iceland, from different countries. And I think what is true about humanity is that we do have this ability, even when we're faced with the most difficult things, that to somehow recreate our lives again, to use our strengths and our communal strengths from the communities that we live in and start to rebuild our lives again. And I've certainly seen that everywhere. But I think that I probably would like to start off by telling you a little story. And
sure.
That is, in 2004, I was invited to go to Thailand after that horrible Asian tsunami. And I was in a small village called Khao Lak with an international team. And that's when I first saw really the impact of that kind of mass scale disaster. I mean, there were thousands of people that lost their lives in Asia after that tsunami. But what I saw was sometimes, although I agree with you that we can't keep silent, and it's important that we talk about and things that have happened to us, especially if that will help us feel not alone with it. But I also learned that there are different portals of healing. And I like to think about it kind of like as three different doorways. We have the doorways of feeling, like, you know, what's our emotions? We have the doorway of thinking. You know, what are we thinking about what happened to us in our life? And then we have this other portal that, you know, many of us are beginning to pay more attention to, and that's the portal of sensations. And that brings me to what this community resiliency model is all about, because I often get the question of, well, what in the heck do you do when you go around the world? And I think my easiest answer to that is I help people learn to tell the difference between sensations of distress and sensations of well-being. And when they can tell that difference, they then have a choice of what to pay attention to. And our sensations can derail us, because if we've had a lot of trauma, there can be all sorts of reminders. It can be a smell. It can be a movement. It can be a touch. It can be the time of year, like Christmas or the holidays, that all of a sudden it reminds us of other things in our life and we don't feel like ourselves. So what we've done with the community resiliency model is we have a very, very simple set of six wellness skills that we share with people around the world. But I think what we've done that's a little bit different is I don't think there's enough therapists, not even in the United States, and we probably have more than most countries, to help all the people who've experienced highly stressful or traumatic events.
So we came up with
the idea that we could teach natural leaders of communities. And that would mean laypersons, ministers, teachers, first responders. I mean, the list goes on and on, as well as mental health providers and medical practitioners. We can teach them how to share about these wellness skills, and we can teach them how to share them with others. And as people do that, there is a greater sense of well-being. And I often use the metaphor about the model is that, you know, most places in the world have gardens. And if we plant, let's say, vegetables and fruit and flowers in our garden, it's very important that we water them. And if for some reason we only decided to water the weeds in our garden, we wouldn't have the plentiful garden that's nourishing for us. And I think what sometimes we've done when we've really talked about the trauma story over and over again, it's like it continues to grow and get bigger in terms of the neuroscience aspects of the trauma, because it's held in the body. And I do believe it's important to talk about it, but I also know that some people don't like to talk about what happened to them. So we often say people can say as little or as much as they want about what happened to them. But if they want to say a smaller amount, that's perfectly fine as well. But if they want to tell us the whole story, what we invite people to do as part of the model is to let us know what helped you get through it. Was there a person? Was there a friend? Was it your faith? Who knows what it could be? But oftentimes all around the world, people will tell me, and I often tell this story. I was in China after the Sichuan earthquake. And I would ask people, I said, what's helping you get through? And they would have an effigy of the Buddha around their neck. Many of them did. And they would touch the effigy and they'd say, oh, the teachings of Buddha. And when I was in New Orleans after the storms and Baton Rouge, and I was in Haiti, and I'd say, what's helping you get through? And they'd go, I got Jesus right here in my heart. But what happens when people talk about their faith, they make what we call a parasympathetic response. And you can see them take a deeper breath. And you can see some of the stress that's connected to the stress and trauma that they've had in their body begin to leave them. And so I think that what I'll say about kind of connecting back to ACEs, Greg, is that I was so taken by ACEs because for the first time, it really gave a public health explanation of what happens to us as adults when we've had adverse childhood experiences.
Yeah.
But what's so important about, I think, what ACEs is telling us, it's not only in our mind, but it's in our bodies. So I think we need all sorts of different kinds of options and how to help ourselves get back into what we call in our model the resilient zone or the okay zone, or some people could call it the zone of well-being. Our model's been translated into many languages. For example, in Spanish, it's called la zona de bienestar, which is the zone of well-being. So, but this zone is really not only a emotional state, but it's a physical state where we feel, we may feel calmer, we may even feel a little excited, but we feel that sense of well-being. Like, I know we both have grandchildren. We talked about it when we first spoke, and I could get real excited thinking about my granddaughter. I guess you could too. Yes, but that's, and it's not necessarily calm, but it's a little bit of a excitement in my heart rate, but it's still that excitement of well-being. And so that's what we're trying to help people to do, is to bring themselves back into that resilient zone or okay zone, and they can experience that sense if they get bumped out, because we all get bumped out of our resilient zone. You know, have you ever, I mean, I won't ask you this, Greg, but I'll say for myself, I've been bumped into my high zone, and sometimes I go, oh, I can't believe I said that. That wasn't the wisest thing to say. And right. I've been bumped in a low zone where I felt disconnected and depressed. And what we've learned as we've gone around the world is that this is a human condition. People have common reactions. And I can really honestly tell you that they've been exactly the same, whether I've been in Nepal, whether I've been in Tanzania, whether I've been in California.
That's interesting.
I was just in Atlanta. I mean, it really is interesting, and so it also is something that when I see the hope that people can experience when they can return to that sense of well-being and start to rebuild their lives again, it's been quite a humbling and really almost a sacred experience for me to be a guide in helping people learn these skills and then to cultivate them into their own communities. And I think that's a big thing about what we do, is we teach people to be teachers of the model, so then they can take it and craft it and cultivate it into their particular communities, regardless of their backgrounds.
Okay, now, Elaine, we started from 0 to 100 really fast. I mean, we jumped into this like, woo dogs, we didn't tippy-toe in. We're in this knee-deep already, which is wonderful. And I love this. Now, you mentioned a couple things that I've jotted down. But the first question I have, you mentioned the different cultures pretty well all respond in the similar way. So are we saying when you go to all around the world in impoverished areas – low-income areas, not even maybe well-developed areas, they deal with the trauma as the same way as what we would in a modern area, a high social area? Can you kind of explain to me, is it all pretty well the same type of cycle?
Well, I have to say, we have a little exercise we do, and we ask people, we break them into small groups, and they say, what are the common reactions you've seen after a traumatic event in yourself or others? And we ask them to just brainstorm, what are the physical reactions? What are the spiritual? What are the thinking changes you've seen? The emotions? What are behaviors? And maybe also, what are the relationship issues that have happened? Physically, people will say insomnia, stomach problems.
Yeah.
They'll say physical pain. I'd say the insomnia is probably one of the number one ones that I hear about.
Interesting.
But also sometimes feeling like a physical weakness in their body. I have to tell you, I've heard that all over the world. Spiritually, people will say, some people actually have a greater faith. But some people lose their faith after having an event like that. And in thinking changes, sometimes people start having distorted thoughts. Well, maybe everyone's out to get me. Or maybe I'm forgetting things. So people talk about forgetfulness, for example, or feeling like they're in a fog. And people have different ways of expressing that in different languages, but the emotions are the same. Fear, despair, grief, depression, anxiety, and behaviors. You know, we also know this from research that's been done, that after we have some of these seminal events, that there can be an increase in domestic violence, for example, but also there can be an increase in addictions. The different kinds of behavioral things that are problematic for us as human beings, and also in terms of relationships, some people can get more isolated from one another.
Wow.
So there's things that are the kind of the common, more challenging reactions, but then there's also what we call, you know, post-traumatic resiliency or growth. Now, that's right. Not a question that can be easily answered in the beginning, but people often say things like, I have an increased commitment to my community. I have, I've learned that I'm stronger than I thought I was. And honestly, Greg, it's been really humbling to see that these answers have been the same all over. Now, there are some differences. This can happen in our own country as well as in other countries, but the issue of food insecurity and housing insecurity.
Yes.
When I see that when people are hungry, that is a sensation that overrides many other sensations. And I,
because they may have never been in that situation before. So for the first time in their life, they don't have access to food. Is that what we're talking
they
about?
May
that
not
sensation.
Have access. That's right. They may.
Yeah.
And you know, and I'm hoping that, because since we're on a different time zone here, I'm going to text Kelly and hopefully she gets back on. But you know, when I first went up to Paradise after that terrible fire, and we did a week full of CRIM teachings, and then Kelly came down and became a community resiliency model teacher, and I was really happy to see her. I didn't know she was coming, and she shared with us that those skills had really helped her. But one of the things that she also shared with me, and I imagine that some of your listeners may know this, that after we have like hurricanes, floods,
and we've experienced floods here in Houston. Yes.
Right. It's like we lose our homes, and sometimes we're living with family members, we're living in garages, and Kelly shared with me, there are many families that were still living in their cars because there wasn't enough housing afterwards. And
but
so,
tell you what, let's take our first break, because Kelly is, I believe, with us. So what we're going to do is take our first break, and then we'll bring Kelly in, and we'll kind of put skin on what you've talked about, and how does this process actually work through a person like Kelly? So this is going to be awesome.
Okay,
keep tuned in right now. We'll be right back with more Breaking the Silence right after this break.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Thank you, Douglas. I appreciate it. We have been listening and enjoying having a conversation with Elaine Miller, Karis, and this has been very enlightening. And I really want to put skin on this. Before we bring Kelly Doty in, we're going to invite you to get on the Shattered by the Darkness website and also the Instagram and join and share that so you can be in the giveaway of the new book that's coming out shortly called Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's kind of interesting, Elaine. My whole book is based on going through an emotional hurricane, and I take the hurricane and the flood physical, and I talk about how that relates to the emotional trauma, and I try to show you how to roadmap through those evacuation routes out of the hurt into the final destination of hope. So that's what the next book is about, Overcoming the Darkness. So if you want to be involved in that getaway or giveaway, get on Shattered by the Darkness website and also the Instagram and share and join in, and we'll get you in that contest. Kelly, Doty, are you here with us? Kelly, can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Well, welcome. We Elaine was just talking about you. You Kelly is a program manager for Strengthening the Families program at Youth for Change, and she's also an adjunct faculty in the Education, Child, and Family Studies department. But I think what I want to do right now, Elaine, you bring Kelly into this conversation and kind of tell me how you all met. And then I want to dig a little deeper in a little bit more stuff that you said a little bit earlier. So, Elaine, I'm just going to kind of turn it over to you.
Thank you so much. And first of all, Kelly, I'm so glad you're with us, because there's one thing about me talking about what we do, but there's another thing for the lived experience. And Kelly's been through a lot over the last year, and we met in Chico. Is that where we first met?
Because yeah, it was in Chico.
Pretty much, completely wiped out after the firestorm. And I think that I was certainly humbled by that, because the news does not really take into account the devastation that your community experienced. But Kelly came to one of the teachings that we did during that week. We did a whole day teaching, and she came to it, and I learned that she had lost her home. And then we didn't see each other until we met again this past July, when she walked into our community resiliency model teacher training program. And I'm going, oh my gosh, Kelly, there you are. And so excited to see her there. And that project was funded by the Red Cross up in Butte County, through the leadership of Anna Bauer, who was with First Five up there, which is an early intervention program. And that's how Kelly got connected. And then I got connected to Kelly. And then she shared with me how the skills that helped her. And I think that's probably enough, Kelly. I'm going to turn it over to you about what all transpired for you and how you've been. And I know you just had the year anniversary up there too, and thinking about all the folks up there in Northern California.
But tell us what happened.
Go ahead.
So where do you want me to start? In the beginning? Just about the classes?
Well, Kelly, I'm wondering if you can help us, you know, that I know you went through a hard time, and if you want to tell us a little bit about that, and also what helped you get through,
yeah.
And maybe if you can touch a little bit about how the skills helped you get through, and what transpired for you to want to become a teacher of the community resiliency model skills.
Yeah. So the day of the fire was really stressful. I have two boys, 8 and 12. They were 7 and 11 at the time. And I think knowing that how I was composed at the time was really how they were going to respond, really kept me calm. So after the fire, we learned that our house was gone and that most of our community was also gone. We lived in an RV for about 3.5 months before we bought a house. And, after we went to the community resiliency training, just the simple reminders of taking a pause, drinking some water, checking to see if I'm in my resiliency zone and making sure, okay, am I getting frustrated? How am I feeling inside my body? Those sorts of things really clued me in, and I also started to watch my children a little bit more, watching their body cues to see if they might be struggling a little bit more than normal. And so it just helped us kind of look more objectively to where we were throughout the day of, okay, are we in a resiliency? Are we getting bumped out? And when we were bumped out, it was like, okay, what can we do now to get back in? And I think not just for our family, but we work with families that have 0 to 5-year-olds, and we worked with the Ridge Community which is Paradise Magalia, and even some Kong Khao folks. So we were working with a lot of families that had no insurance, who were renting, that lost everything, and really had no idea what to do or where to go. And being able to just be calm with them and teach them some of the skills were really important. And so, and to teach it to staff who were working with the families. My coworker went to the two-hour community resiliency model up in Paradise when you did that. And she came back and was like, oh my gosh, this was so helpful for me. And we ended up putting your posters up on the wall that day. And so we keep looking at those and reminding families as well.
Okay, so you lose your house in the fire, and Elaine and the group comes in and they teach these resiliency courses or these classes, and you learn right. this model. Okay, so you, right. you tell me, I guess since I haven't lost a home like that, a lot of us that are listening tonight is going, wow, I can't even imagine. What kind of, you've lost your home, and you're going into a class environment. What did you hear that day or during that training that you it was like, wow, that helps? What's some of the things that really brought you to a place of calmness or peace that you hadn't had before you walked in there?
Well, I think it was just a message of hope, and that hearing Elaine talk about other scenarios that she had been in, other natural disasters, and how communities do rebuild. And I think the resiliency zone was the biggest thing for me, because I can track to see if I was doing okay or not. And a lot of times, I mean, I remember a really long drive after work. I was commuting from a lot longer places, because I don't know, after disaster or after this specific disaster, there was no rentals available. And we stayed up in Washington for 3 weeks with family. And when we drove back in this new RV that we had, new to us, I should say, but when we drove back, we didn't realize that there weren't going to be any RV spots available. And so the closest out was about 45 minutes away from where we used to live. And so it was quite a commute every single day. And I just remember the drive thinking, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can do this every day. And because I had a 5-minute commute. And I remember grounding on the steering wheel and thinking, it has to be all right, because this is your new life for a while and there's not another option. And grounding really helped. I did a lot of grounding in the car. And okay. I also had more empathy for people.
Right. Tell me, because I'm very, very interested in grounding. What do you mean by grounding for people that are listening to this and they have stress, adversity, trauma, and they need to get down from that anxiety? What helped you specifically in the grounding area? What did you experience?
Okay, so I really, you know, Elaine kind of taught us to grasp the steering wheel, really feel what it feels like beneath us, in our hands. How did the seat feel against my back? Was it warm? Was it soft? Was it hard? Feeling the seat beneath me, feeling either the gas or brake pedal, where my left foot was, just feeling my surroundings. And when you're more focused on what your body's feeling, you're not focused on all the potential negative thoughts you could be having.
Okay, so Elaine, now,
really trying to clear my mind.
Yeah, Elaine mentioned before, I think you got on, Kelly, three different portals: feelings, thinking, and sensations. Elaine, mm-hmm. is this what we're talking about, the sensations?
That's exactly what we're talking about with sensations. And, you know, we explained grounding. You did a great job, Kelly, by the way. But it's just our attention to our body in the present moment and paying attention to how we're making contact to a surface. And it doesn't have to be our whole body, as you heard her describe it. It can be our hand. It can be our foot. Sometimes people think about grounding, they have to feel their feet on the ground. For some people, that's not very comfortable to ground in that way. So we've kind of opened up and widened the portals of how someone can ground. But when you pay attention, there's one thing I failed to mention in the beginning. You know, this is also grounded in neuroscience.
Absolutely.
There's a theory that says neurons or brain cells that fire together wire together. So every time that Kelly decided to ground rather than go into an anxiety loop, she was actually feeding her well-being, when I use that metaphor, the garden. And as you're creating these new, what they call neuronal pathways or cellular pathways. And so every time she did that, it became stronger. So I don't know, Kelly, after a while, did you have to pay as much attention to the grounding? Because as you did it, sometimes you don't have to be as intentional about it because you just automatically do it.
No, I did find that after a while, I was just, when I touched the steering wheel and knowing, and I also changed the way I thought about the car ride. I got really good at listening to NPR and really listening to the stories and information, and shifted my focus on, I have to do this drive, to, okay, I get to learn a lot on the way home. Even just touching the steering wheel would calm me down. Even just sitting there, you know, I was able to just take a big, deep breath, get on the road, and do my thing. And so it definitely helps calm me.
So is the neuroscience behind this, is it actually transferring the anxiety to another location as far as your thinking starts looking at or feeling the leaves in your hands or the sidewalk as you're walking? You're kind of wiring your brain to override what it would be thinking?
Right. And so, you know, I often say the question, what else is true?
Wow.
So you may feel anxiety, but there maybe you'll feel something a little bit differently if you pay attention, for instance, to something as simple as holding on to the steering wheel. But what also tends to happen, which I think Kelly just illustrated, is that once you're in this resilient zone, as she said, that was an important concept for her, you have clearer thinking, because then what's called your prefrontal cortex is more available to you. Because if you're in those states of high anxiety or if you're very depressed, sometimes your prefrontal cortex, your seat of executive functioning, is not as available to us. So these simple little really skills, and they're really simple, some of you probably do them already, we've just put them in a very precise menu. So that's very usable and friendly. And also, we really haven't talked too much about kids, but we have a whole project with Emory University where they've incorporated this model into a K-12 program called the C-Learning Program. And children can learn these skills the program is for K through 12. So that's also possible.
So when children start feeling the anxiety and the pressure and the stress and the buildup and the 2-liter bottle of emotions being shaken and the caps getting ready to be unscrewed off, they can actually go to a mode of, here's a place that I want to shift my thoughts to the sensation portion. This is fascinating. Go ahead, Elaine.
Right. And I think the other thing is, when Kelly said the posters are our help now strategies or reset now. They're very simple things. It can be pushing against the wall. It can be, like Kelly said, having a drink of water and paying attention to it. It's really an attention practice. And when you start doing that, your nervous system starts to change. And as Kelly said, you can get calmer. And children can experience that as well. So that's been the exciting part of seeing it starting to be integrated into schools.
Well, and also, so after I attended the training, I wrote a grant through Red Cross and got funding to go teach parenting classes in Chico, Oroville, Paradise, and Magalia. And as we went through the training, it was so interesting to see the parents' response, because most of the parents had been through the fire or were somehow adversely affected by the fire, and all of them were like, oh my gosh, this makes total sense, and these are easy things, and they started doing them, we had one parenting class at a place that where they had kind of built-in neighbors, and one of the neighbors said, I saw her do this, and she was, instead of yelling at her kids, she gave herself some space, she took a resiliency pause, and then she went back and handled the situation in a much better way. And so parents appreciated learning about adverse childhood experiences and how it can affect our bodies and the neuroscience behind and the implicit memories and everything that we go through childhood and how it repeats into the future, possibly if we don't kind of put a stop to it, and how if we focus our attention on the more positive things, that will also be the example for the children. And so I think by modeling as an adult, we can also have that impact on our children.
Wow, this is fascinating. We have Elaine and Kelly with us tonight, and if you want to join in on the conversation or have a question, because I know there are people listening right now that have lost their homes in fires. They have lost their homes just recently in Hurricane Harvey here in Houston, because I know we have a lot of Houston listeners. Feel free to call in at 888-627-6008, because if I was you, I would want to pick the brains of these two individuals right now and say, how do I get through this type of day? So if you have a question like that, feel free to call in when we take our first or our last break, 888-627-6008, and we'll be back in about a minute and 12 and a half seconds for Breaking the Silence.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Well, I tell you what, I can't wait till the other book comes out so we can change commercials. Thank you, Douglas. I appreciate that. We have Elaine and Kelly with us tonight from the wonderful state of California. Not quite as nice as Texas, but it's a pretty good place to live. But Houston's the place to be. Anyway, I won't go there. I always like to push Houston. Thank you for being with us. And I tell you, Elaine and Kelly, we'll start with Elaine. How in the world, what called you to this kind of work? How did you get involved in this?
Well, I was a teacher of family medicine at Arrowhead Regional Medical Center. I was the behavioral science faculty, and so many people would come into the primary care clinics, and my job was to teach the family practice residents about how to assess for depression, anxiety, et cetera, et cetera. And so many times when I would go in with a resident and we would start talking to the patient who may have come in with insomnia or some kind of digestion problem, it was about trauma. There was a drive-by shooting in the neighborhood. Their child had just been shipped off to Iraq. Someone died in the family. And so it really connected to me, the mind-body connection, and how much it was left out at that point. This was a long time ago now. Left out of medical training. And so I started trying to do as much research as I could about, you know, what are some of the cutting edge neuroscience information that I could bring to the family practice residents. And I have to say, I read a paper by Bessel van der Kolk that was online at that time. I think it was called The Body Keeps the Score.
The Body Keeps the Score.
And I read that, yes, and it made so much sense that, oh my gosh, this is what the residents need to know, because
the residents I work with were all very smart young men and women, but and they knew about the autonomic nervous system. They knew about the, you know, what we call the HP access and the stress response. But it was like, what do you do about it? How do I help a client or a patient that comes into the clinic? And you know that, you know, mental health professionals at that time were not as available as even they are now, because we have a lot of integrated care clinics now. But still, the whole idea that if you're in those states of high arousal, if you're in what we call sympathetic hyperaroused states, first of all, there's a physiological response that's not good for us that can lead to immune dysfunction. So I really tried to talk with the doctors about the realization that if we knew that it was coming from trauma, it was not just in their mind, it was in their body, which is why, as we're talking about this today, it's really important for all listeners to know that there's a mind-body connection, and that some of the things that can help you are not only in talking about some of the hard things that have happened in your life, but also learn to read your nervous system so that you can tell the difference between sensations of distress and well-being, so that you have a choice of what to pay attention to. So it really happened from family medicine. And I have to also share on my mom. My mom died about 10 years ago, but my mom and dad met in San Francisco after World War II. My dad was a farmer from Montana, and my mom came from El Salvador to work as Rosie the Riveter in the shipyards because they needed people to work. And they met each other somehow. They were quite an unlikely pair, but I have to say that my mom, who had a fair amount of struggles in her life, she wouldn't have been attracted to go to see a therapist. But if her, because she was very, she's full of faith, very full of faith. And so if her religious leader would have said to her, "Oh, Elsie, there's a class after church today, and it's about helping your family have greater well-being," she would have been the first person to sign up for that. So I think that's why, you know, it's called the community resiliency model, not, doesn't have the word trauma in it, because I really want to help people to see that what happened to them is about their biology, and it's not because they're mentally weak, or that's not because there's something wrong with them. And I think that with a strength-based approach, it can help people that sometimes shy away from trying to get help, that may open up more doors and pathways for many people to get help that otherwise wouldn't.
Wow. I tell you what, you have a line that you mentioned in your writings. It says, "Adversity is not destiny." What do you mean by that? I know there's going to be a deep meaning for this, but that phrase, "Adversity is not destiny." What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, I first heard that when I was in Montana a few years ago, and I thought, "Oh my gosh, that's so true," because I think, you know, and Greg, you're certainly an example of that, right? Look at the wonderful work you're doing in the world, is that we may have had a lot of hard things happen to us, and it doesn't have to define us. It doesn't have to be driving our bus. Our trauma story is part of us, but that we have the great capacity to reconstruct our lives. That post-traumatic resiliency that I've seen all over the world, that we can say, this happened to me. I hope it never happens to another child again. But these are the things I'm going to do in my life to try to see if I can create something better and more hopeful, not only for my children, but for others. And
okay, so Kelly,
a lot of us.
When you're saying that now, Kelly, how does that come true with you? You've gone through this, lost your home in the fire. You've got involved in this teaching. You're on the interviews with us tonight talking about the impact of this and how it's changed your life. How does that phrase, "adversity is not your destiny," what's that mean to you since you've just gone through this?
Yeah, well, you know, for me, it started long before the fire. I found out when I was in high school that my mom had suffered some abuse growing up, and I realized after learning about adverse childhood experiences that her stroke at 65 was a lot played into that. And so I began a lot more research on ACEs, and, you know, we all want to be trauma-informed, and so we want to go from instead of what's wrong with you to what's happened to you.
Oh, yeah.
And while that's great, I love Elaine's model where it's like, what's right with you? What can we do moving forward? And I love the resilience piece of it because I don't want to just be trauma-informed. I want to be resiliency-informed. And so that's really what made me tackle this model because it just gives so much hope, and it gives, like, the final step of this is where we should be going.
So it packages all of this up in a total package and puts a big bow on it. This is how to deal with the trauma.
So.
This is how to overcome it. And now this is how to make the positive impact on your community.
Right. And it wow. even talks about the trauma. And I think that people need to know about it and at least you know, when I first learned about ACEs, I was teaching parents that I worked with about it. And one mom, I still remember her so well. She was just like, wow, this just explains so much. Because I think a lot of times we think, what's wrong with me? But once she knew this, she was like, this makes total sense. And now I can do something about it. Now I know what to tackle. And she did her thing. She was doing yoga. She was eating healthy. And she kind of forgave herself for whatever was going on. And now that we have the resiliency-based model, it's just that's the direction everywhere needs to go.
Okay, now you...
Can I say something, Greg,
too? No, please, go ahead.
You know, I'm so proud of Kelly. I mean, here Kelly was from the worst time of her life, came to a class, and then she came to learn to be a teacher. It's a five-day class. And now she's going out in her community, and that's, to me, the model, is that she is the best person to talk to her community, and she lives in that community. And my hope one day is that there would be people prepared when these things happen, that they would already be boots on the ground and would know these skills. But I just can't say how much, how proud I am of Kelly and the work that she's been doing since this terrible thing happened to her and her community.
Well, that's great. You know, Elaine and Kelly both, you have a fan. I'm a fan of both of you, and you guys are champions. Elaine, okay, I've bought into this system, okay? You've convinced me. When I first had the Zoom interview with you the other day, I was already convinced. It was like, whoa, this is a powerful person, and I just love talking with you. How do we get more information from what's changed Kelly's life to what you're teaching around the world, not just the country? How do we find out about this model? And if we have listeners that want to dig deeper in what you're sharing and what you're teaching, how do we find out more?
Well, I think the first thing would be to go to our website, www.traumaresourceinstitute.com. And then we also have an app. It's free. It's called iChill. And if you have a smartphone, if it's on the Apple Store, though, they have something called "I Chill My Beer." That's not our app.
So it's iChill, I-C-H-I-L-L.
Yes.
iChill app.
And actually, it's iChill. And so it is available. Actually, we're in the process of updating it. It will be updated by the end of the month. But you can go ahead and download it right now. And you can learn about the skills of the model from the iChill app. And you can go to our website, and also you can also get my book on Amazon. It's available in Kindle as well. And you can learn more about the models and the work that we're doing around the world.
Okay, so Trauma Resource Institute.com.
Yes.
And then they can also download the iChill app. Or they can also get the book off Amazon, Building Resiliency to Trauma, the Trauma and Community Resiliency Models. So that's the best way, because I got a feeling there's going to be a lot of people contacting me when we say goodnight, because my emails and texts just explode, and I want to make sure I give them the right information to be able to get in contact with you. Anything else in the last minute or two that we have here, Elaine or Kelly, that you want to just share with us about resiliency and how the community can just join together to learn about these six wellness skills and things of that order? Anything else you have that you want to share in the last minute or so?
I just want to just say one more thing is sometimes things that happened to us that were before the age that we could remember them, like before the age of two. And
right.
So the body has a wisdom that words don't speak, and we can work with the sensations that may not make sense to you. And you can learn to kind of intercept that kind of hijacking of the nervous system to come back to your resilient zone, even if you don't know why your sensations react the way they do. So there's a lot of hope, even if there's not a story.
So this resiliency model can actually help counteract what happened before we even know our body can remember at earlier
exactly.
than 2 years old. This is powerful. This is powerful.
Yeah.
Kelly, we have about 30 seconds. What anything you want to share as the last thing tonight, Kelly?
Yeah, I think that in times of crisis, I think that pulling together as a community is one of the most important things we can do, and as a nation. And so just reaching out to anybody who needs help in any of these natural disasters is really amazing, and I definitely appreciate all the support we receive. So if you can donate, even if it's just we're thinking about you, an email or a phone call or something.
Fantastic. Well, Kelly and Elaine, thank you so much for joining me tonight on Breaking the Silence and sharing the story. And I guarantee you I'm going to download all this stuff, and I'm going to become a teacher. And Elaine, do you do these workshops around the country to where I can actually
come?
Yeah, we
do. Yeah, we have one in Atlanta in March.
I'm going to be in Atlanta in February. Okay. And I would like
to... Yeah, look on our website, and you can see where we're offering them in different places around the country.
Okay, I'd love to be part of this. This is fantastic. Thank you both for joining me tonight. I appreciate it very much from the bottom of my heart.
Okay, thank you so much for having us.
It's my pleasure. We just want to let you know in just the last few seconds that we have, no matter what you've been through, no matter what you're going through right now, no matter what you're going to go through tomorrow, I want to let you know there's always hope. There's always hope. Always hope. Hang on to that, dig deep, and get grounded in that, and remember that that's where it's all about. I want to thank you for joining us tonight. Remember to hop on Shattered by the Darkness webpage and the Instagram, and I'd love to hear comments and words from you. If you have anybody you want to reach out to, I'm here. Join us right here next week at 8:00 Central Time next Sunday night for another edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless you. Have an awesome week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.